Blessed are the weird people.
Poets.
Misfits.
Painters.
Writers.
Troubadours.
For they teach us to see the world through different eyes.
This is Blessed Are the Weird on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Jacob Nordby.
Hello, my friends. Hello, blessed weirdians, wherever in the world you might find yourself today. I'm Jacob Nordby. I am broadcasting from Empower Radio's satellite location here in Boise, Idaho, and I'm just happy you're here. Happy Friday. So, conversation we're going to have today has been fomenting in my world for quite some time, and I have a guest who will be coming on shortly who is a fellow writer for the Good Men Project. He also, his pieces are going wild on the Huffington Post. A very interesting guy. And he's also working currently on a sci-fi novel. Doug Ziegler also possesses a vast knowledge of 80s music that he hopes will pay off big at some random trivia night. But the reason I wanted to bring Doug on today is we began having this discussion about the fact that he is a self-professed atheist, and I know that's a hot button. Wow, it's just such a hot button. And, of course, I grew up almost the exact opposite of that mindset. And as a kid, we were sort of taught that anyone who held that idea was not just a benign, regular human being walking the earth, but really a bad person. So, Doug, without any further ado, let me ask you a question. Why do atheists eat babies for breakfast?
Well, we only really traditionally do that on Sundays, you know, since it is a Sabbath. But it is pretty much an interesting road to look at the idea of any sort of major religion, you know, views people who aren't believers as almost in that realm of being a card-carrying member of Satan's holy crusade.
Well, I love that you're here with me today, and I'm glad that we've been able to become friends, sort of offline a little bit, not in person yet. I hope to make that happen sometime in the next, year or so.
Me too.
I think we'd have a lot of fun. But so I really wanted to bring you on because, there's a lot of people. In fact, Doug, if you'll hear me just for a few seconds, and then I want to jump right into why you're here, which is to talk about life from your perspective and what it's like to live a good life without the absolute moral arbiter, shall we say. But let me just frame this up for the Blessed or the Weird audience in this way. We live in this time on planet Earth of massive change, and it's not so much that the world has always been changing, but we're in this time during which the change is rapid and we notice it. And we're so connected that it's just right at our top of our awareness all the time. And as a result, many of our old stories, many of the ways we viewed reality have shifted pretty drastically. And as a result of that, we're in this time when there's a lot of uncertainty. So a lot of people just don't know what they believe about any one particular thing, including the supernatural or God or whatever. And so what that has done from my perspective, Doug, is it drives a lot of people to these sort of polar ends of the spectrums, and they find themselves fighting. And those who have released the ideas of the old sky god, in some cases, find themselves using tactics which tend to be kind of cruel. And in some cases, the discussion devolves into more of the same old crap that is what we don't really like about the heavy old religious stuff in the past. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. And, there's been pretty much a seismic shift in belief systems. And, with that comes a lot of uncertainty. We live in a society now where, people have their beliefs and we grip them and become these, almost junkyard dog versions of people trying to defend our positions when, we really don't need that. Everybody has their own views. Everybody is free to choose what they want to believe, and why can't we just kind of, in an old Rodney King way, all get along?
Well, okay, so let's go there for a minute, though. So why can't we? Because I know a lot of atheists, and and most of them don't eat children. Like, only a couple actually eat children for breakfast.
I prefer that for lunch.
No, but what I've discovered is the ones who are most vocal, just it feels like we can't get along with the other side because we can't. And I think there's a seed of truth in that. And what would that seed of truth be, Doug?
Well, there is the kind of the old axiom that, you know, science and religion can't coexist. And most atheists come from the realm of, I believe science, you know, is the end all be all and explains everything. And that isn't exactly true. There's loads of areas for wonder and awe in the world that aren't explainable by science. So you have these guys that are, and I say guys, there's obviously some women who are in this movement as well, but the major mouthpieces for the atheist movement, or the new atheists as they are want to be called, you know, guys like Richard Dawkins and, you know, Christopher Hitchens, who is no longer with us, and Lawrence Krauss, those guys are, you know, they're on the forefront, and they are absolutists. They do not believe in any deity. They don't believe in the supernatural. They are science-based men. And the reason that comes off so brusque is the idea that, you know, with religious folks, they can't rectify the idea of not having a deity kind of guiding them. And, you know, it's the whole quandary of, if things are uncertain, what can I latch on to? What can I hold that will tether me? And, you know, I think the other part of it is with the atheist part is that, you know, with these guys that are so aggressive about atheism, that makes the people that are a little uncertain on the atheist part latch to them. You know, it's, those guys are not what all atheists are. They are the, at the forefront of, you know, getting the voice out. But the vast majority of us just want to live our lives, live a good life, happy life, you know, have our kids grow up and be healthy and happy individuals and responsible individuals. But to say that those guys who are absolutists are what atheists all are, it's akin to saying Westboro Baptist Church is the mouthpiece for all of Christianity. It's just not, there's too many flavors of what people are within the whole atheist / humanist movement is.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say this. This might surprise some, but I really put myself in, I don't like ists and isms for myself. I grew up in such a dogmatic situation that I just cannot sign myself up for anything, including political parties, or I could barely get a library card, Doug. But here's the deal. I actually get it because I did grow up in such a repressive and in some ways kind of abusive construct. I actually get why some of the more vocal mouthpieces are the way they are with this, because, and tell me if I'm wrong, because you've probably spent more time with some of them than I have. But from my perspective, they look at it as, we have to wage this war on ignorance, because that stuff that religion has been promoting and the superstition and all of this, you know, mumbo jumbo has done nothing but enslave humanity and promote more suffering. And so we actually have a responsibility to find it and stamp it out wherever we find it. Would you say that's accurate?
That's completely accurate. You know, the issue, if you look at someone, a guy I really enjoy listening to is Sam Harris, who's an atheist as well, but he's more on the end of eradicating organized religion. Not so much heavy on the deity part. But if you look at a lot of the organized religions, you know, the major ones like Islam and Christianity and Mormonism and, you know, even Scientology, there's a lot of issues with, you know, women being treated fairly, for instance. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, perpetuated because that's what the dogma dictates, is you need to follow this path. Now, granted, there's just like with, there's all sorts of flavors of atheists, there's all sorts of flavors of Christianity, for example, where you have, you know, the Joel Osteen kind of people where it's, you know, happy-go-lucky, here it is. And then you have the fire and brimstone people that are the Quaker variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the idea that they have to speak loudly because they are, one, a pretty hefty minority. I mean, the last poll, I believe, said something like 20% of the population of the United States does not affiliate themselves with a religion. That's still a pretty big minority. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot to be said for people who think in the completely rational, you know, I need empirical proof to get me to believe in a deity, that they feel they need to be louder. They see it as almost a revolution of sorts.
Yeah, well, God, this could be a whole series with you, Doug, and maybe we'll even do that at some point, because I really love this conversation. I feel like it's tremendously important, and it's not just about what happens in church or, you know, not or whatever the atheist church version of church is.
Well, it's actually interesting. There are these things cropping up where they call them atheist churches, where it's just a gathering, which I think is honestly, to me, kind of silly, because you're trying to combat the religious ideal. Why would you kind of delve into what is their gathering, you know, what they deem to be their gathering? Why would you do that? But that's actually a kind of a small movement that's gotten a little bit of attention, even on Huffington Post and ABC News and things like that.
Well, look, here's the deal. Humans are, we crave connection and community. All right. And especially in times of great change and uncertainty, we crave it even more than ever before. I don't think that ever leaves us. And we are also in a time, Doug, during which we're leading more and more isolated lives, physically speaking. You know, lots of us live in subdivisions. We don't necessarily know our neighbors real well. We go to work and we come home is kind of the common American experience. And even though we're connected much more so with the rest of the world than ever before through social media and all this, you know, all this information, it just gives rise to an enormous amount of anxiety. And I feel like that's really what we're addressing here, is the how human beings deal with anxiety, how we all deal with the unknown. And good news is, sometimes when I have this discussion with people, they get really upset. In fact, a couple of my atheist friends got really upset when I said, you understand that truly dogmatic atheists do have a religion, and they do worship something. It's called no God. and it has its own set of dogma and all of that. Now, I'm not painting everyone with that brush, and that's not really even part of this discussion. What's interesting for me, though, Doug, is I went through this my own journey in life where, and I wrote about it in The Divine Arsonist, where I basically had to have and had all of my concepts burned down. And it's been a fascinating journey since then, because I really examined deeply, okay, well, what if everything is just mechanical? Maybe that is, and I discovered, Doug, that even in that quest, there was a search for certainty. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because as a species, the idea of having something that we don't understand or can't quite grasp is scary, you know, and it's why we explore. You know, it's why, you know, guys would sail across the ocean when they thought it was flat. You know, there's a lot of want and desire to know. And that also ties into a lot of the vitriol that we get into between you know, even political parties or religious differences is, you know, I'm scared, but I know what I know, and I don't want to be wrong. Like, there's a lot of, I don't want to be wrong. And as human beings, I mean, our egos tend to jump to the forefront and try to defend our positions simply because we don't want to be wrong. We want to believe what we believe and know that it's right. So someone challenging that can be a little scary as well. And, you know, this whole idea of how we are coming forward and moving away from sort of the older religions is scary for folks that are heavily invested and indoctrinated into it. So I think that it's a scary time for them. So it's no wonder that they will defend it more heavily, simply because people don't like new in a lot of respects.
Yeah, and I discovered when I would leave, because I have had a number of leavings of really saw what appeared to be very solid constructs for myself, Doug. When I would leave one, I would kind of go looking for the next one that was solid. Okay, that one was BS, but I'm looking for the next one that will make sense. This makes everything make sense, and I had the benefit of having the next one also get decimated for me. So this became this understanding for me, Doug, that I'm not going to find any one bubble that I can pop into which will forever and always make sense of the world for me and is absolutely true without any cracks in the armor. I love to hash metaphors there, so there you go. But let's talk a minute about...
I have to agree with you on that. I look at someone like my wife, she has delved into things, looking into Celtic lore and Celtic beliefs, and even going into paganism, which gets a gigantically bad rap from the old church. But it basically was more of a natural look at the earth, and their gods were more or less just nature itself. But I find it interesting that she will look at things, and she doesn't believe you have to find a bubble. You can find pieces that fit what works for you. And that's really what we all need, I believe, is just something that works for you. If you believe that Christian God is what you need and it works for you and it gives you joy and happiness, and most importantly to me, doesn't cause anybody else pain, then I think you should feel free to explore that as much as you want. And you shouldn't also prevent anybody from exploring if they want.
I agree. And, I want to nod to the folks who do feel it's their duty, to challenge the silliness, and not just silliness, but actual repressive and abusive superstitions and all of that. I want to nod to them because I really honor that part of the conversation in this world, even though it's not comfortable. I tend to be a real nice guy, and I like to find common ground with all of us. But I actually honor the extremes because it's part of the conversation. It's part of the burning down process that I feel humanity is trying to do right now. So even though I don't love it, I don't embrace the extreme and the drama and the political stuff back and forth, I also understand, Doug, that part of what's happening is that challenge is like a charge on an old castle that where people are held prisoner. And so from that perspective, I actually really appreciate it. I feel like there's a different way, but in some fashion, humanity's doing what humanity needs to do right now to make some pretty significant changes, I feel.
Yeah, I have to agree. I actually think that it's akin to like what nature does, where it does, a brush fire, and it just wipes off the overlay and the stuff that it doesn't need, so new stuff can crop up and grow and make things new and whole again, and just try to regenerate what we have. Mm-hmm. And, it doesn't mean that religion's ever going to completely go away. I don't think that's likely. But I do think there's room to help people who are in religion who can't see past it, to give them a lens to see the world outside of just that narrow little scope. And conversely, they could help us potentially see something else that we didn't see. Mm-hmm. It's not something where I believe you can go in thinking that I have all the answers. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the answers. There's a lot of stuff that I don't know. And, I'm not frightened by that. I think that's a great thing, that I have a whole life to try to sort through what I believe and where we are going. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, I agree. And, Doug, I didn't mention this to you before, but we get the ability to read people's minds when they tune into this show. And right now I'm reading some minds, not so much of the folks who would self-identify as atheists, but some of my dear friends and people who are listening who want to cross the line into more freedom, internal freedom, but they're still kind of held by Pascal's wager. And I know, being the thoughtful and well-read person you are, you'll know about it. But in case people aren't aware of Pascal's wager, Blaise Pascal, fascinating mathematician, philosopher. And the argument kind of runs like this. If you erroneously believe in God, you lose nothing, assuming that death is the absolute end. So if there's no end, if death is the end and you believed in God all your life, then you really didn't lose anything. Whereas if you correctly believe in God, you gain everything. In other words, you don't go to hell and you get to heaven or whatever. But if you correctly disbelieve in God, you gain nothing, because death ends all. Whereas if you erroneously disbelieve in God, you lose everything, eternal damnation. So I can read the minds of some listeners who have been in some kind of religion for a long time, and whether they know it or not, Pascal's wager is running around inside of them. And I've had a lot of discussions with people who didn't know what Pascal's wager was, but it was still there. How would you address that?
You can make that claim for any religion. I mean, Pascal was a Catholic, so from his perspective, it behooved him to speak strictly to that God. But, mm-hmm. you know, you could, if you pick that one God, then you alternately are picking off any other God, like Allah or Odin or L. Ron Hubbard, whatever one you want to choose. But that's the thing, is you're still bound by a belief system in what he was promoting. In that there's still dogma that you have to follow to get to that particular heaven, or, you know, Valhalla, or whichever one it might be for that particular religion. There's still laws and rules you must follow. I think there is a really interesting quote in a movie that was actually based on a Stephen King book called Needful Things, where the devil comes to the town and, you know, Ed Harris is speaking to him, and he said, "Do you believe in God?" And he said, "Honestly, I always thought that if I just lived a good life, it didn't really matter." And I thought that was pretty astute. You know, it's, if you live a good life, you know, you take care of your kids, you teach them to be, you know, happy and responsible, and, you know, make good choices and to learn from the bad choices. I mean, really, we all want the same things. We want happiness. We want joy. We want health. You know, if prosperity is part of that, and I don't define prosperity by money, then I think that's, we're all on common ground there. We all want that at the core.
Right, right. Well, and I want to pay respect to people who have that. I mean, we're talking about an understanding or a belief that goes, this is embedded in consciousness very deeply, Doug, that whole Pascal's wager thing.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's why it's such a tough route for people. The fear of hell, for example, in my life growing up was so powerful. It was one of the last things, it was one of the last things that I finally was able to release, was this fear. Maybe I'm wrong, okay? But so just because we don't have enough time to really delve into this for a long time here, I'm going to move back to you for a minute and go back to where I started asking you, you know, why do atheists eat children for breakfast? And you said, well, they don't. And I love questions like that, because it's kind of like saying, when did you stop beating your wife? And it's kind of a hard, you know, it's kind of a hard question to answer. But people, the other argument people have is, well, okay, but if there's no God and if there's no consequence, then what's to stop me from doing whatever I want? Just, you know, tearing stuff up, screwing everybody, you know, financially or physically or whatever, and murdering people, running amok, essentially. So what's to stop me if I don't have any boundaries, no fences? How do you answer that as somebody who practices a life without that moral arbiter?
Well, for me, I believe that morality is largely innate. Now, you also have the idea of you have parents and siblings that can help guide you into what's right and wrong. Now, that also comes fraught with, if there's a religious piece to it, then they add that to the mix. But if you take something as like evolution, and, you know, you always hear people talk about survival of the fittest as equated to evolution. Well, evolution isn't just always about the individual survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times that the community matters to make sure the whole community thrives. And that means they band together and they do what's right for each other. You know, it's something as simple as that. You know, it's not a good idea from the time that your consciousness comes into being to, you know, punch your brother in the nose. You know, you might want to do it, but you don't, you know, that that's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So I think that really within our DNA and just the essence of us that we know what's right and wrong, basically. There is, obviously some anomalies where, people are just through some sort of bad mix of DNA become just bad people. That's true just because of how the combinations of our genes can mix together. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that there are some good things to come out of religion. I think that, teaching you to love and love thy neighbor and, to treat people as you want to be treated, I think those are valuable lessons. But I think we already knew them. I think that religion just can emphasize them.
That's really good. And Doug, because we're down to under a minute now, I just want to say this. I feel like we're at a place in history where we're being asked to, kind of like the whole left brain, right brain theories, feel like we're being asked to not make a choice between left and right, but actually learn how to integrate the whole. Actually embody and integrate a sense of wholeness and also be able to live, live in the question. And walk sort of a middle path, which pulls from both sides. I'm going to let you wrap it up by responding to that.
Well, I believe that we are coming, like you said, to a head with the idea of everybody has to be polarized. I think people are really generally getting tired of it, in that you shouldn't have to pick a side and stick to it. I have some parts of me that are conservative and some parts that are very liberal, but that doesn't mean I have to stick to the liberal end. I think there's a very real thing of us all coming together and just trying to figure out how to make it work, no matter what you believe.
Doug, we're out of time, and I'm so thankful you came and joined me today. I would love to have you back at some point to continue this conversation. And folks,
I would love that myself, Jacob.
We will make sure that you have links to find Doug on Good Men Project and Huffington Post. Thank you so much for being here, and I ask you, as always, to go out there and get your shine on. We'll be right back.